Hello, this is Jerry Pippin. Recently, a British tabloid ran a story featuring a comment by Nick Pope. He said that ETs might be coming to eat us, or something to that effect. Well, naturally, this caught my attention because of the strange occurrences of cattle mutilation and reports of arms and legs and other body parts found on UFOs by abductees. The second reason was because Nick Pope is a man who has some credentials in the UFO field. He was in charge of the investigations of UFOs for the Ministry of Defense in the UK. So we thought it would be a great idea to get in contact with Nicholas Pope and talk to him. Found out about his experiences as an official UFO investigator in the UK. One of the things we'll bring up for sure is the Rendlesham Forest incident. It happened about this time of year, many years ago, but Nick Pope was involved in the official RAF base investigation. Let's say hello to Nick. He's on the line from London. Nick, welcome to the show. And you are with the Ministry of Defense, right?
Right. That's correct, yes. For much of the early 90s, I ran the Ministry of Defense's UFO project. My job was basically the equivalent, I suppose, of the old United States Air Force Project Blue Book. It was to look at the UFO sightings reported, to investigate them, and to see if there was anything of any defense interest.
So you did this for how many years?
Well, I had joined the Ministry of Defense back in 1985. But my time on the UFO project was 91 through to 94.
Did you volunteer for that job, or did they just assign it to you?
They pretty much just assigned it.
Yeah. Were you interested in UFOs before that?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't particularly interested. I didn't know anything about them.
So in other words, you were initially pretty skeptical.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well, what happened here? You've got some pretty dire predictions, I think. Maybe not. We'll need to find out about that in a moment. But, I mean, give me a little feel about what type of investigating and collecting and things were happening at the UFO research area for here at the Ministry of Defense. In other words, what kind of cases were you involved in?
Well, I used to get about 200 or 300 UFO reports each year. And then the process of investigation was fairly standard. I mean, obviously the first thing that I would do is get as much information as possible from the witness.
In other words, you're talking, since you worked for the government, you probably did a lot of military pilot investigations and talk.
There was no particular brief. It was anyone and everyone who reported it. So obviously members of the public could report, but yes, police officers could report, military personnel, pilots, both civil and military. I got all of those reports.
Now, you looked into other mysteries as well. I mean, you even covered a little bit of crop circles, right?
That's correct, yes. You can't run a UFO project without finding yourself just drawn into anything weird and wonderful. So, although it wasn't in the formal terms of references, I got drawn into alien abductions, animal mutilations, crop circles, even ghosts at military bases.
Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned alien abductions. A lot of that going on in England? I mean, you said 300 or 400 reports. What would 10% of that?
No, I think 200 or 300 UFO reports.
Okay.
Yeah, I probably didn't get more than half a dozen alien abductions.
So they were pretty rare.
Yeah, but I think that one of the reasons for that is that there is underreporting. I mean, if you think that people are going to be fairly reluctant to report a UFO, maybe because they fear ridicule, I think they're going to be even more reluctant to report alien abductions. I'm not saying it doesn't go on in you know, fairly big numbers. I think it's just that maybe the Ministry of Defense wouldn't get those reports. And don't forget, maybe we'll cover this later, I mean, of course, a lot of people actually thought that the Ministry of Defense was involved in a cover-up of this, so they would be naturally reluctant to contact us at all.
And what were your marching orders there? Were you basically asked to cover things up, or were you...
No, not at all. I mean, the party line was that UFOs were of no defense significance, which pretty much doesn't mean anything other than there hadn't been any overtly hostile activity.
Yeah, in other words, there hasn't been a UFO attack yet, but you think...
There hasn't been an attack.
No. You think that may happen.
Well, this is where the recent media reports of my leaving the MOD have been a little bit exaggerated. I mean, I think I had no idea that resigning from the Ministry of Defense was going to become the international news story that it clearly has, and I simply issued a statement, and I was interviewed saying that I thought that the UFO phenomenon raised some interesting defense and national security issues, and all I said was that look, we shouldn't dismiss these sightings without some form of proper scientific investigation. Somehow that got translated by some of the media into
they're coming to have us for lunch, right?
And that's not quite what I said. Now, what it was, obviously, if any of these UFO sightings were to be extraterrestrial, at the moment we don't have, for example, a contingency plan to deal with first contact. I said clearly to me that was regrettable. I thought that there should be more done.
Now, you saw no evidence on a personal level of any kind of contact with government agencies, or did you? From ETs?
Not of extraterrestrial. I'm not one of these people that's going to come on the show and claim to have seen crashed saucers and dead aliens or anything like that. I mean, the British government's UFO project is, I think, effectively fairly scientific in nature. I mean, it's all about analyzing radar tapes and looking at photographic and video imagery. But if there were any aliens, I certainly wasn't briefed in on that.
Yeah, now you did investigate probably the most famous one over in England, the Rendlesham Forest thing.
That's correct. I mean, the Rendlesham Forest incident, of course, happened long before my time on the UFO project. It happened back in 1980. But I felt so strongly that the investigation had not really been done thoroughly that I wanted to reopen the case file on it, see if we'd missed anything.
Did you?
Well, it was very difficult, of course. By then, it was many, many years after the event, and unless you solve these cases quickly, in my experience, you're not going to get to the bottom of it at all. But what I did do was, of course, Colonel Holt took some radiation readings with a Geiger counter from the landing site, and I took these readings to some scientists in the defense community, and I said, look, I'm not sure we ever really got to the bottom of what these, you know, what these radiation readings mean. What are the levels significant or not? And they came back and said to me, yes, they seem to be 10 times what we would expect the background levels to be there. So clearly something extraordinarily significant had happened. But you know, the other thing that I found out about that was that the whole investigation had been mishandled, in that the Ministry of Defense was carrying out its investigation, but of course the United States Air Force had carried out its own inquiries into this, and of course witness statements had been taken from many of the key players in this, but those witness statements were never passed to the Ministry of Defense. So we didn't have, for example, Jim Peniston's sketch of the craft and the symbols seen on the side. Conversely, we didn't pass back to the United States Air Force any assessment of the radiation readings, so it was totally mishandled.
Why do you think that happened?
Well, I think it's one of those things. It's easy to see conspiracy, but I tend to suspect bureaucracy. It was over the Christmas period, of course. A lot of key personnel were on Christmas leave. Inevitably, when you're dealing with United States military bases, but on UK soil, there's a sort of jurisdictional issue, and it's easy to see how what we effectively had was a sort of left-hand, right-hand situation, and both.
So in other words, nothing like very nefarious. It's just ineptness due to the circumstances.
Yes, I think so. And the other thing, I go back to my point that there isn't a contingency plan for this. Now, the military, of course, whenever an incident occurs, normally there's a plan, there's a standard operating procedure. If this had been, for example, an aircraft crash, there would be a manual on it. Everyone would know what units to call in, what processes to go through. Because there isn't one on a UFO landing, everyone was frankly winging it.
So basically, if you had a suggestion to correct things, it would be what, to create a manual, or have they by now? A standard operating procedure?
You need a standard operating procedure for this sort of thing, so that we don't make the mistakes of Rendlesham again. This was possibly Britain's best chance to get to the bottom of the UFO mystery, and it was frankly a missed opportunity. In line with good military doctrine, a standard operating procedure, some sort of contingency plan seems very sensible, not least to address issues such as the potential biological hazards that might come from alien contact.
You know, that story is fascinating, and most of our audience knows about it, but do you think it was true that there was some kind of contact with a British military officer or a United States military officer?
Well, very few of the contemporary witnesses talk about having seen entities. So I'm a little skeptical about that. I think inevitably some of the tales get a little embellished in the retelling, and time dulls the recollections anyway. But I mean, this story is sensational enough without needing to bring extraterrestrials into it. This was not just lights in the sky. This was a UFO, no doubt about that. And it landed. Now, whether there were entities in it or not, I don't know. I can only speculate.
You have other cases of landings that you investigated?
No, very few. Most of the UFO cases are not that close, a close encounter. There were one or two cases where certainly members of the public thought that something had come so close that they said it must have landed. I remember a case from 1993 where somebody chased a UFO in their car, and they were convinced it had come down in a field. And they drove up to this field, and they ran, out to see what they could see, but there was nothing there. So some near misses, perhaps, is the way to characterize that.
You have no direct or even indirect evidence that tabloids are right when they say there is a possible ET attack coming?
No, I don't. I mean, I think those remarks were somewhat exaggerated. I'm certainly not aware of any alien invasion. So I think we can all sleep soundly in our beds for the time being.
So from your experience, the government's certainly not covering this up, because there's an element here that would signal danger to society, like maybe certain ETs are coming and kidnapping people and taking them away.
Yeah, I mean, bear in mind, though, of course, I can only speak with any authority on the position here in the United Kingdom, and that's the only.
Did you ever compare? Yeah, did you ever compare notes while you were doing this job with other countries and what they were?
Yeah, that's interesting. Certainly the Belgians were quite interested in the UFO subject, and of course they had some very interesting sightings in 1989 and 1990, and indeed in March 1990 there's a very famous incident where the Belgian Air Force scrambled two F-16s to intercept a UFO that had been tracked on radar.
Yeah, the Belgian triangles are world famous.
Absolutely, very famous case. Mm-hmm. The Italian Air Force, again, I know, has done some interesting work. I think the Brazilian Air Force has. Perhaps the most interesting thing is related to America, because, of course, as you well know, the official position of the United States government is that they've been out of the UFO game since 1969, when Project Blue Book was wound up. We had a very interesting wave of sightings in Britain in 1993, and We contacted the Americans about that through our embassy in Washington. The interesting thing was that they told us, yeah, we're familiar with these sort of triangular-shaped UFOs too. And someone, certainly, even if they didn't have a formal UFO project post-Blue Book, someone was still in the game, shall we say.
Yeah, so you did get some answers back.
Well, some very limited answers. I must say there was...
Why do these governments hold things so close to the vest? It seems...
Well, that's an interesting question, and I don't have an answer. I have one intriguing possible speculation, and I suppose one of the things that most interested me and some of my colleagues when looking at the UFO mystery was, could UFOs enable us to develop some advanced technology? I mean, could we understand, for example, more about aerodynamics, avionics, propulsion systems?
Right, the technology.
Yeah, if any of these UFOs really were extraterrestrial, clearly they would have a technology, a quantum leap ahead of anything here, and the nation on Earth that first acquires and understands how to use and can replicate that technology be the dominant power on this planet for the next 10,000 years. So perhaps you are playing for some fairly high stakes.
Did you get a feel there, working in the official British government, that someone was working on reverse technology or whatever you want to call it from UFOs?
Not from any hardware, but certainly I worked very closely with colleagues in the Defense Intelligence staff, scientific and technical intelligence specialists. And we were interested in finding out more about these UFOs, whatever they were. What I'm saying is that we didn't have one in a hangar that we could...
Yeah, you're right.
But we had photos, we had videos, and we tried to make some assumptions from that and sort of say, well, how do we think this flies? What sort of propulsion system would it be using? Could we model this and put it in a wind tunnel and then, you know, start making some calculations and some speculation about you know, how these things fly?
What is your opinion about it? Are we close to figuring out that?
Well, I think the $64,000 question is, do any of these UFOs have faster than light travel? I mean, that's the absolute clincher.
Well, you know, from a non-scientific guy here that's covered the subject for four decades, approaching five, I'm an old guy, Nick. Basically, it appears to me perhaps that's true.
Well, if so, of course, to acquire suddenly faster than light technology would just change the whole...
And it would change everything.
It would change everything, exactly. It would change the future path of the human race, because we would no longer be consigned to this planet or the very near environs. We would quite literally be able to explore other star systems, other parts of the galaxy, other galaxies indeed. The human adventure would not begin and end here on Earth, but it would be a roadmap to the stars.
Now you're still doing UFO research, right, on your own?
That's correct. I mean, I found this whole subject so fascinating, I couldn't turn my back on it. Inevitably, I mean, the other thing is, I find myself still, of course, approached by people who've seen strange things. So I keep up my interest, you know, in a private capacity, and of course, I'm frequently asked about this subject by the media. I lecture on it at science festivals and things, and I think that's interesting, and trying to bring it out into the scientific community. It is perhaps no longer the exclusive
I understand what you're saying. In your investigations with the Ministry of Defense and later on your own, Have you ran across people who had pretty vivid descriptions of these extraterrestrials? I mean, in other words, we do shows and we hear varying descriptions of varying types. And so they're not all the little gray guys, evidently.
No, but certainly in my own research and investigation, both for government and privately, I've certainly come across those entity descriptions, and certainly I've come across a number of descriptions that do match the short gray entities with large black almond-shaped eyes, but I've also come across reports of taller, fair-haired beings. It's very unlikely that we share the cosmos with just one other civilization. So I suspect that extraterrestrials come in all shapes.
So your hunch, in other words, would be that we're not being invaded or investigated or visited, ever what term we want to use, by just one group. And they may not even be working in unison with each other.
No, quite. I mean, I think, you know, you look at the diversity of life down here on planet Earth, and it's the old adage, isn't it, as above, so below, or vice versa. But, I mean, you know, the point is that there is unlikely to be two civilizations in the cosmos. I think it's extremely unlikely there's one. I mean, I'm convinced that we're not alone, but it's equally unlikely to me that there would be two. So it doesn't surprise me that both UFOs and indeed the entities that are sometimes seen in association with UFOs really do seem to come in all shapes and sizes.
I don't think you were investigating at the time, but there's an interesting thing that happened in England. It's very similar to what we call the Kecksburg incident in the United States in Pennsylvania, in which there was evidently a lunar-type module standing on three legs, which then flew off. I think that was at an RAF base in Suffolk.
Well, no, I think that is the Rendlesham incident.
Okay.
It involved, yeah, the Rendlesham Forest incident.
Okay, now, I've always thought of that. That Rendlesham incident is more of a conventional flying saucer, but maybe not.
The Rendlesham UFO actually landed, and of course that's why Colonel Holt.
It looked more like some sort of module or something rather than just a circular flying saucer.
Yeah, very very much so. In fact, I think that's a very good description. It's comparatively small craft, but something that came down on a tripod-like device on three legs, as it were. And when they plotted out the indentations that the legs had made in the ground, they formed the shape of a perfect triangle.
Now that is interesting. And I guess when we talk about these...
Just to interrupt again, because it's an interesting point, when I was talking about the high radiation readings, the radiation readings peaked in those three holes where the thing had come down on legs. Yes. Now, not dangerously so. The levels would not have posed a threat to the lives or health of Colonel Holt and his team, but nonetheless, they were assessed by the Defense Intelligence staff.
So probably that radiation, if we surmise something, probably came from some sort of a propulsion unit or something. We don't know.
It may have done, but yeah, the honest answer is we don't know. And I'm loath to speculate, but all we do know is that it clearly was associated with the craft because it peaked in those three depressions where the thing had been resting on its legs.
When did you start changing your idea from skepticism to, well, there may be something here? I mean, was it the first year of your investigations all of a sudden, or the change happened fairly fast?
It was about halfway through my tour of duty, and in fact it was a specific UFO incident.
Oh, really? Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, what happened was it was over a series of several hours on the 30th and in the early hours of the 31st of March 1993, there was a big wave of UFO sightings over the UK, and there were probably, in all, several hundred witnesses to this, many of them police and military, because this was quite late at night, so a lot of them, a lot of cops on patrol. And the most spectacular part of this encounter was that the UFO flew directly over two military bases, RAF Cosford and RAF Shawbury. It was seen by a patrol of Air Force police officers at the first base. They said it it flew right overhead. And then it was seen by the Met officer, the meteorological officer, at the second Air Force base. This was a man with eight years' experience in the Air Force, who sees helicopters and fast jets, obviously, on a regular basis, because he's in the Air Force. And he describes this vast, triangular-shaped craft, he said, midway in size between a C-130 Hercules transport, a Boeing 747, so several hundred meters in diameter. He said, a sort of flat triangle, if you look at it from the underside, with them three lights in each edge, and one larger but slightly dimmer light in the centre, as it were, directly on the underside of the hull. He said that this thing was firing a narrow beam of light down at the ground, a beam of light sweeping backwards and forwards, he said, as if it was looking for something. He said there was an unpleasant low-frequency humming sound coming from the craft, rather like standing in front of a bass speaker or something like that. He said suddenly, from moving very slowly, no more than, I don't know, 30 or 40 kilometers an hour, it shot off to the horizon many times faster than a fast jet. Now, this is, as I say, an Air Force witness describing this to me the day after, and he's clearly very shaken up by it. We all were when we heard about it, and we launched a full investigation. It went up the chain of command to the assistant chief of the air staff, two-star military officer. Of course, needless to say, we never managed to explain that. How can you say something like that is swamp gas or a weather balloon?
You know, you investigated crop circles. What do you make of those? I mean, a lot of them are man-made, I guess.
But yeah, I think a lot are. Some of the simpler circles, and of course, this started off as a fairly basic phenomenon, and we only got these complex pictograms a long time later. But some of the simple circles may well be some sort of meteorological phenomenon associated with wind vortices, whirlwinds, or some other meteorological effect. I mean, as to whether any of the complicated pictures are anything to do with UFOs or from the Earth itself, the Earth energy, Gaia, the living Earth. I've heard all sorts of theories. All I can say is, well, I suppose I can't rule anything out, but I've seen no evidence. What I would have wanted to have done, of course, was to do much more analysis of soil samples, cellular analysis of the crop, that sort of thing. But we didn't have the resources for it, and really, I couldn't devote much time to crop circles. We'd had our hands full with UFOs, of course, 200 or 300 reports a year. It's a lot of work.
Now, I can't let you off of here. Our time's about up, but I can't let you off without asking more about the ghosts at Air Force bases that you investigated. Were they connected to UFOs or just...
No. I think a lot of people who study ghosts for a long time say that they're often associated with traumatic deaths, and it doesn't surprise me that on military bases where people, went out to war from, Air Force bases that we use, the people going on bombing raids in the Second World War, for example, or fighter pilots who consequently lost their lives, it doesn't surprise me that there are a lot of ghost sightings at these sorts of bases. I mean, I've had reports from the people who patrol these bases at night, and they say very often there'll be particular spots where the guard dogs, their hairs will stand on end, the hackles will go up, and they'll refuse to cross particular areas. There'll be a temperature drop, the unusual sorts of things. You know, even the Ministry of Defence headquarters building, which is on the site of a very, very old building in London, is reputed to be haunted. And I spoke to some of the guards, some of the security guards who go around there, and they say there are certain parts of the building that they don't like to go around alone at night.
I don't guess there's any reports that you had of ghosts actually causing harm, other than scaring the...
No, it does. Ghost reports don't seem to be malevolent, and as you say, the only harm is the person getting quite a fright.
Yeah, now...
No malevolent intent.
Right. And if I understand you correctly, you never really had a report of an extraterrestrial entity causing harm to anybody.
No, indeed, no. So, I don't know who these people are, what they're doing, what their motives are, I'm not crying alien invasion, run to the hills.
Now, before we wrap it up here, you're still into this field. You got anything working right now that's very interesting, or are you basically just doing some lectures?
I'm just really doing quite a lot of media work.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I just presented a TV program here in the UK about the 1993 UFO sighting that I mentioned, and I'm just doing what I can to raise public awareness.
Thank you very much, Nick. I've enjoyed it. Our time's up. Post-production by Jane Swartley. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Cheers.
Fast Walkers. UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear. Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet. Things you were never meant to know about.
Out in the universe, they were horrified. They said, oh my God, the kids have found the matches.
We are being engaged as a planet and as a species by other beings.
The biggest secret in the history of our world is about to be revealed.
We're dealing with a big, big story. As I said, if it was that simple, it would probably been out sometime.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD anytime, anywhere. On sale now.